Robots Radio. Games. Lore. Stories. Community. Just press play.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome, weary traveler. Need a short rest? Oh, I see. They said you'd be showing up about now. Come on, through the portal. Best not keep the Lore Mistress and Lore Master waiting. You know how they get.
Robots Radio presents the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. The best way for everyone from experienced dungeon masters to those curious about D&D to learn more about the worlds, creatures, and lore of Dungeons & Dragons.
Hello and welcome to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. My name is Sergio.
My name is still Sean.
You haven't changed it. Not yet.
Not yet.
I mean, at this point, you've got a successful writing career, a burgeoning lorecast career as a lore TA for the D&D lorecast. You know, it's hard to rebrand at this point. I think you're always going to be Sean from now on.
Yeah, yeah. I would just change my name in private so that, like, when I make hotel reservations and stuff, I'm not, like, mobbed. You
like
know?
Ziggy Stardust.
Yeah, exactly.
That's a good point. Speaking of your burgeoning writing career, really quickly, you got a new book coming out in just a few months.
I do. Yeah, it's called The Dissonance, and it will be out July 23rd from Pantheon Books.
We'll have a link to the show notes for that. Just a little quick personal plug. You know, like it's we're all very proud of your accomplishments here at the Tower, and don't want to have that go unsaid, and not let the folks know. What you got going on when you're not listening to me prattle on about D&D lore.
These are the two things I do. I write books and I listen to you talk about
that's
lore.
It. That's all you do. You just wait in stasis. Kind of like Michael Keaton in Batman Returns when he's just sitting in that chair.
That dark room.
Until the bat signal comes on and then he turns to it.
Oh,
what's he doing? He's just contemplating. He's like, God, I wish I could dress up like a bat and beat up mentally ill people. So this is a D&D Lorecast. We are jumping back into Kryn, the world of Kryn, the world of Dragonlance. We touched on it briefly last year when the 5th edition Dragonlance book came out, and I want to dive back into it. I want to really dig into the lore, into the histories, and we're doing that with the companions, arguably some of the most important characters in the entire history of Dragonlance. So this week, or this month rather, we're doing this on a monthly schedule. This month, we're going to talk about the dwarven hero, Flint Fireforge. Now, Sean, you mentioned that you, before we recorded, that you identify with dwarves in many respects.
Yeah, yeah. I usually play as a dwarf whenever I play D&D. I definitely identify with being short and stocky and having a beard. And I feel
a bit brusque.
But yeah, definitely. I'm not
but
very diplomatic.
But a great friend.
Yeah, exactly. I've got a good heart. Yeah, yeah. I
hate elves. God, you hate
them. Oh, I cannot stand tall people.
Beautiful, slender, tall people. You cannot stand them.
Bring on the short, stocky, bearded folk, or I don't want to know them. No, I'm
you
just
enjoy,
kidding.
You
I
enjoy
love
ale. You go to a brewery once a week to enjoy mead and ale with your friends.
Yes, yes, I do. I think I would make a very good dwarf. I'd be a terrible miner. I'd be one of those dwarves who like writes poetry or something. I don't know.
You'd be the you'd still be a dwarf, but you kind of go against the archetype of the standard archetype of, you know, being getting your hands dirty and whatnot.
Yeah.
So Flint Fireforge, born in 203 AC. AC, of course, being after Cataclysm. Well, there's like a Latin term for it, but that's essentially what it means. Was the second of 13 children from the Fireforge clan in the village of Hillholm. It's a lot of kids, a lot of diapers to be changed.
And so, as the second oldest, he probably had to change quite a few of them.
Oh, yeah, I know. I mean, like, at that point, you're almost like a
junior parent.
Surrogate father, right?
Yeah.
So the Fireforge clan is one of the great Nidor dwarf families that live close by the great fortress of Thorbarden and usually always in that village of Hillholm. Fireforge clan dwarves are known to have serious heart conditions, many of them dying as a result at what would be a dwarven middle age. So Flint, known for his stout stature, his barrel chest, and formidable forge-hardened arms, stood over about half the height of an elf, but possessed a heart as big as any mountain. Again, if you were to copy and paste that sentence, delete the name Flint and type in Sean, I would think this is someone who knows my good friend. speaking of him. So Flint's family history was shrouded in mystery. His mother, known only as Mama, and his father, Durgar Fireforge, a veteran of the Dwarf Gate War against the Mountain Dwarves. Now, the Dwarf Gate War is really cool. It occurred like 200 centuries before Flint was even born, but it had a lasting impact on his people and, as a result, had one on him. So the roots of this war. So this is after the Cataclysm. Nidor refugees seek entry to Thorbarden. High Thane Duncan refuses them entry, hoping that they can kind of, you know, make it on their own. Like, I don't want to stretch out the limited resources we have by bringing them in. You know, they're dwarves, but they're not exactly our dwarves. And, you know, hopefully they can make it. So in 30 AC, Duncan shuts the gates of Thorbarden due to vanished supply routes and dwindling stockpiles. You know, aware that the Nidors would struggle, you know, he feels he should sacrifice one clan to save others. Harsh winters, early storms, you know, kill what would normally be game, you know, the livestock, the deers and whatnot, and ruin the crops of the Nidor dwarves. A couple of years later, hunger and plague once again drive them to seek aid from Thorbarden, but they are once again turned away. Conditions worsen by 34 AC, prompting another plea for help, which is also ignored. Thane Rhaegar Fireforge tries to meet Duncan at Pax Tharkis in 37 AC to discuss these issues. Thane Duncan is still unable or unwilling to provide aid. The meeting ends without any kind of resolution and nearly leads to a conflict right then and there. Meanwhile, in 39 AC, the mage Fistendandalus leads an army into Abanacenia, aiming to gain godhood. Plainsmen and Nidor dwarves join his army, driven by greed as well as a somewhat of a desire for vengeance. You know, just try to get back at these mountain dwarves who denied them in their time of need.
Yeah, yeah. Makes perfect sense.
combined army marches towards Thorbarden, which forces Duncan to go to war to defend his realm. There are several key battles, like the attack of Karras, where a dwarf of Thorbarden named Karras attempts to kill Fist Hand Danilus but fails, as well as the capture of Zaman, the Battle of the Plains of Dust. And at the war's conclusion, there was destruction of both Hill Dwarf and Mountain Dwarf armies. The gates of Thorbarden remained closed, the Plains of Dust wiped barren, and the magical fortress of Zaman collapses and is thus renamed Skullcap. And so the legacy of this conflict, of the Dwarf Gate War, is that there's nothing but hatred between Hill Dwarfs and Mountain Dwarfs. You know, both sides remain at odds for generations, growing to tolerate but never depend on each other.
So that's it's really
not
sad.
Yeah, it's very sad. It's not a, you know, a smash on sight sort of situation. It's not, you know, like, but, you know, they definitely wouldn't break bread or probably even hang out together.
Yeah, so, I don't like it when dwarves don't get along. This makes my heart sad.
It makes your heart as big as a mountain very sad.
That's a lot of sadness.
And so this conflict fueled Flint's deep-seated hatred for mountain dwarves, a sentiment that he carried throughout his life. And despite his rough exterior, Flint did have a kind heart when it came to everyone else but mountain dwarves. And especially when it came to children. He crafted toys out of wood, which he joyfully gave away, earning him the admiration of many. His skills as a blacksmith as well as a woodcarver were unparalleled, and his works were highly prized even after his passing. He's also known for his quirks, including a fear of heights, which I guess, I mean, if you're that short, being high up, probably a little daunting.
Feels unnatural. I'm just going to say it.
Call it what it is. As well as a deep-seated dread of boats and water. He also had a tendency to talk to himself, which I guess is... I guess I don't necessarily talk to myself.
You've got an intense inner monologue, though.
I do have an intense inner monologue. I never, or not always, usually vocalizing it, though.
Yeah.
Much like myself, unlike, you know, I don't talk to myself like Flint does, but one thing we do have in common is that we're both allergic to horses.
That's sad.
I learned that a couple years back going to my allergist. So he said, you're allergic.
You didn't learn it at a dude ranch? You didn't ruin somebody else's cool weekend?
I that was my dream. It was a lot like Little Miss Sunshine. My dream was always to be a dude ranch hand. And my uncle gave me like a patch of horsehair and I started sneezing. And I hadn't spoken for several years, and I ran out of the van and cursed loudly.
It was pretty sad.
And then I told a Hollywood screenwriter about it. And I think that nothing came of it, but there we go.
But yeah, it was a great conversation. He seemed way into the story.
We're taking notes and everything. Not the Hollywood screenwriter. Flint Fireforge held a disdain for gully dwarves and goblinoids, which, I mean, who doesn't hate goblinoids? Come on. Which just added to his colorful personality. Armed with his trusty battle axe and a knack for picking locks, Flint was a formidable companion in just about any adventure, which I don't know if you know this, but adventures are kind of what D&D is all about.
I had started to notice an emerging theme throughout these episodes that I've been a part of.
It's a trend.
Yeah, there's definitely a trend. Like it's like adventuring is like the main thing that D&D is about. I thought it was just about lore.
Oh, you know, you go on the adventures, the lore is created and then repeated. And then once you need more lore, you just send someone out on another adventure.
Oh,
I mean, I'm
sense.
Guessing that's how it started. And then, you know, you are able to accumulate, you know, just kind of like backlog all this lore And at this point, we've got, you know, centuries and centuries of it.
We're at peak lore.
I mean, we're eating good. That's all I'm saying. So Flint also, he spoke common and dwarven, obviously, and some elvish, along with a smattering of goblin, thanks to his friend Tanis, who taught him a little, I guess, conversational goblin, as it were. One of Flint's prized possessions was the helm of Griffin's Mane, which is a testament to his bravery and prowess in battle. His adventures took him all across Ancelon, where he fought alongside the heroes of the Lance in the War of the Lance, facing countless challenges and dangers. But we'll get to the War of the Lance in the second half of the show, at least, you know, his role in that. But let's kind of start back at the beginning after this sort of summation of Flint. So as previously stated, he was born in Hillholm, where he grew up on a family farm, begrudgingly doing chores and often tricking his siblings into doing the work for him. So I read this and I'm like, all right, I feel kinship with this dwarf.
This little Tom Sawyer dwarf.
right. I'll be your Huckleberry. I've never seen Tombstone, by the way.
Me neither.
Maybe we'll have a lore cast viewing
Tombstone
party.
Tombstone night.
Where we watch Tombstone. Anyway, I digress. His older brother, so the oldest of the 13, Elmar Fireforge, taught him the art of blacksmithing, and the two became close as they ventured around the Careless Mountains in search of treasure. On one of their adventures, they stumbled upon a hobgoblin cave where they discovered a treasure pile. Elmar claimed a gleaming axe, naming it the Tharkin Axe, while Flint filled his pockets with gems and coins. Which, again, I see a pile of stuff. I'm not going to go for
a weapon,
a tool or a weapon. I'm going for the shiny rocks and the money.
Yeah. With shiny rocks and money, you can buy many tools.
Exactly. Years later, and here's the thing, is like years later, Elmar even presents the Tharkin Axe to Flint as a gift on his Fullbeard Day. So he ends up getting everything anyway. So who's
everybody
really...
loves Flint.
Everybody loves Flint. That's okay. So that's another D&D Adventures TV show right there. A sitcom type show about Flint Fireforge growing up, his misadventures, his scampery, getting his younger siblings. He's got 11 of them.
Yeah, he's got a grip of younger siblings.
He's got 11 of them that he can finesse into doing all his chores for him. I mean, plays his cards right, he might never ever have to do chores again.
Tune in every week and find out.
Exactly. Will Flint Fireforge take out the trash? Find out this week on Everybody Loves Flint. Check your local listings for times. So in 288 AC, Flint was approached by an elf from Qualinesti who admired his metal works. This encounter led Flint to the elven city of Qualinas, where he struck up a friendship with a half-elf named Tanis. As obviously Tanis, one of the other companions, a friendship that would shape both men's lives. Over the years, Flint and Tanis became close friends, with Flint even teaching Tanis the art of metalworking. However, Flint's life took a dramatic turn when he was caught up in a series of events surrounding the murder of Eldalay in Qualinost. Solas Terran charged Flint with finding the real killer, leading him and Tanis on a dangerous adventure that ultimately cleared Tanis's name. Back in Solas, Flint took in a young girl named Tika Whalen, making toys for her and eventually seeing that, you know, to her adoption by Odic Sandeth. In, you know, keeping with his general, you know, general love of children. It's like, hey, I'll make you a toy, make sure you get parents.
Those are the two things, yeah. Like Santa only does half of that.
I know, like I'm twice as good as that dude. And you're gonna be good for him? You're gonna behave for him when I make sure that you get parents. Flint has some.
He's got a chip on his shoulder.
He's got some resentments for sure. Flint's fear of water, stemming from a incident where he nearly drowned, stayed with him for the rest of his life, which made him reluctant to cross any body of water. But despite his aversion to boats, Flint joined his companions in traveling to Carthay to assist in stopping the Minotaurs from taking over Ancillon. We originally meet Flint in the original Dragonlance novel, Dragons of Autumn Twilight. And so all this has happened before he becomes one of the saviors of the world. He fights off a group of Minotaurs.
He gets on a boat to do it, it sounds like.
He faces his fear of boats and water to then fight Minotaurs. I mean, the guy's a real mensch.
Yeah, yeah. It's okay to be mad at Santa Claus if you're doing all this stuff, I think.
Right. And it's like, and he won't behave for me. It was during this trip that Flint formed a fondness for a half-ogre named Kursig, only to be devastated by her untimely death at the hands of a Minotaur. Flint's plan to stay in Solace for the winter changed when he learned about a deal between Hillhome and the Thaewyr. A trade agreement allowed the Thaewyr to use Hillhome's pass road, causing Flint's outrage despite the financial gain. Mistaken for his deceased brother, Elmar, Flint learned about his brother's death while working on Thaewyr's wagons. So, sort of a, hey, like, I thought you were dead. Like, what do you mean? Like, aren't you Elmar Fireforge? He's like, no, that's my brother. Oh, well, hey, your brother's dead.
Guess what? I got some news.
Guess what? I don't know if you're able to connect the dots in this conversation that just started, but... So, upon returning home, Flint faced accusations from his nephew, Basalt, and grew suspicious about his brother's death and his involvement with the Thaewyr. Flint learned more about the deal at Muldoon's Tavern and discovered Basalt's guilt over his father's death. A confrontation with Basalt led to a fight, after which Flint broke into Delwar's forge to investigate the secret shipments. Flint discovered weapons in the wagons, other stuff, but managed to escape, losing his boots in the process. With a decision to make, Flint returned home, where Bertina gave him Elmar's old boots, Bertina being Elmar's widow, but was soon confronted and was warned to leave or be arrested. I mean, if you're in Flint's shoes or his boots...
Yeah, his brother's boots.
His dead brother's boots. What would you do? Would you leave? Or would you stay?
You know, if I'm Flint, and I'm already a hero who's been on boats and stuff, I'd probably stay and try to figure it out. I think I would have enough confidence in myself to stick around and try and unravel the mystery.
Well, that's exactly what Flint did, so... You're in the right headspace. I like that. Today you were a Lortier, but tomorrow meaning like the near future, not like literally tomorrow.
Not actual tomorrow.
No, but you know, someday soon. It's a metaphor. You're a writer. You know what I'm talking about. Ignoring the warning, Flint left for Thorbarden to uncover the truth behind the Thiawar's secret shipments. His journey there was fraught with danger, including being attacked by a troll. Despite being saved by Basalt, Flint insisted on continuing his journey alone as they neared the gate city of Thorbarden. Upon entering the city, Flint was mistaken for a spy by Thiawar dwarves and thrown into the beast pit. So, I mean, we've all seen Return of the Jedi. We can probably guess what a beast pit is.
Yeah, yeah, it's not something where I have to look up at the
beast
in the glossary.
Pit Dragonlance pulls up on that on that Google search. Yeah, it's exactly what you think it is. In this pit, he encounters a carrion crawler. It's awful, disgusting. Anything with more than I'd say four legs gives me the heebie-jeebies.
Really.
Like giant, like millipede, centipede sort of things.
Mm. What about when Spider-Man had eight arms?
Well,
I guess he had six arms and two legs.
Yeah.
Did that freak you out?
No.
Be honest.
I prefer him like that.
Interesting. Yeah, this just adds to your colorful personality.
He is actually a Spider-Man at this point.
Finally, he's come into his birthright.
I know. Yeah. Did he grow four more arms?
I think so. I think it was like the, I don't know the full story, but I think that Stan Lee started writing it and then quit the book after writing himself into that corner. So I think Jerry Conway had to come in and try to figure out how to wrap it up.
Oh yes, it is. It's four extra arms. I mean, I don't know how he got rid of them, but I mean, that six arms and two legs. You'd think, you know, as opposed to two sets of arms, he'd shoot out another set of legs just to keep it even, right?
But I guess, right. What can and, do and also legs? Spiders have eight legs. They have no arms.
Exactly. I guess he's more man than spider at this point. Yeah, the man or the man is more like the man is
has subsumed the spider.
Anyway, enough. That's for our Spider-Man lore cast. So Flint's in the beast pit, facing carrion crawlers, comes across a colony of Agar dwarves. So these gully dwarves believe that Flint has fulfilled a prophecy. If Flint has found himself with in the beast pit with a gal by the name of Pyrian Cyprium. And together, the gully dwarves think that these two have fulfilled a prophecy and named them King Flunk the Second and Queen Furian the First of Mudhole, which is just amazing.
Yeah, speaking of Return of the Jedi, it's like when the Ewoks kind of make 3PO their god.
There you go. They are initially disgusted by the idea, but they turn it to their advantage and enlist the Gully Dwarves to defend Hillhom from an impending attack. They devise this Gully Dwarf army, lead them back to Hillhom, encountering and defeating the Silver Swords along the way. Upon his return to his home, to Hillhome, Flint learns of Muldoon's death and the Thywar's arrests, prompting him to devise a defense plan for the city. His plan includes building a barricade made of and out of the earth and to use fire to blind the Thywar with Rubric Fireforge, shooting a barrel to create a bright light. So during the Battle of Hillhom, Flint witnesses several deaths, including those of Garf and Bernard Fireforge, who died saving him. And I'm not one to usually make fun of people's names, but if your name is Garf and then like your brother's name is Bernard, I'm like, what? Like, really? Like, I'm like I'm a onomatopoeia for something Pinky says, and you're going to name my brother Bernard? Like Bernie?
Okay. Bernard.
Forced to retreat, Pyrian, also known as Queen Furian, the First of Mudhole, is slain, which causes Flint to use the Tharkin axe, the axe that his brother had found and then gave to him on his Fulbeard day, use that axe to kill Pitrick, who was the fellow who killed Pyrian, causing it to superheat.
Interesting.
So what was able to be found out, the axe's language was essentially deciphered, revealing it would last, you know, it would, you know, remain in whole until the day it was used by a dwarf to kill a dwarf. And on that day, it would be destroyed. So when Flint used the Tharkin axe to kill Pitrick, the Tharkin axe was no more. Flint grieved for his lost love, his brother, and other valiant dwarves as the remains of the axe blew away from the courtyard. Flint was removed from the throne of Mudhole as he no longer had a queen. And Pyrian and Bernard were laid to rest in the Fireforge burial grounds. And after spending a little bit of time in his hometown of Hillhome, Flint returned to Solace, and that is where we'll pick up. After the middle of the show, we'll discuss his involvement in the War of the Lance, as well as talk about if we were to have a Fullbeard Day, which is like the dwarven male coming of age, you know, what would we want? Sean and I will have our answers for you, dear listener, and hopefully you can think about it and answer yourself in one of the many different avenues of communication that we have. We'll be right back after the middle of the show. It's the middle of the show where we do all the middly housekeeping things. Let's go ahead and jump right into it so we can get back to the lore as quickly as possible. First and foremost, thank you so much for listening to the show. Thank you for supporting the show in this way. It really means so much that y'all would listen to the ramblings of a lore-obsessed D&D fanatic. And so thank you so much. If you want to support the show in other ways, you can certainly follow us on all of our social medias, pretty much anywhere. We are at D&D Lorecast, the letters D&D, Instagram, X/Twitter, whatever it's called, TikTok, soon to be coming on Twitch. We are inching ever so closely to our Twitch launch. Very excited about that. We'll be streaming D&D games, just random TTRPG games like Cyberpunk, Vampire the Masquerade, stuff like that. And maybe even just some other general role-playing games, like some JRPG games like the Final Fantasy series, stuff like that, you know. Anyway, you could also email us at dndlorecast@gmail.com. You can join the Discord. There are links to all of this in the show notes, of course. Be a part of the community. We would love to have you. Another way to support the show is by going over to patreon.com/dndlorecast and signing up for the Patreon. We have tiers as low as $5, all the way up to $75. All cool benefits, bonus content, early ad-free episodes, invites to the actual plays in the patron roundtables, workshops. I'm actually working with a patron right now on something very, very cool. I am sworn to secrecy on it, but it is very cool. We're very excited about what's going on there. Just a bunch of cool stuff. We built it in a way that if we were patrons of the show, if we were fans of the show, what would we like to see from it? So definitely check it out if you are interested. And in terms of D&D news, of course, we have a brand new D&D novel out. We have the Fallbacks Bound for Ruin that just came out on Tuesday by Jalee Johnson. We spoke with her. We had a great conversation about the book, about D&D nerddom in general. If you haven't listened to our discussion, let me tell you, she is a real one. She loves D&D, has 4 years, loved it before she even got a chance to play, technically. You can order it wherever books are sold, your major e-retailers, your walk-in bookstores. I recommend like walking into a store, a physical store, and buying it, preferably one that's, you know, small business owned. But I digress. If you need to get the book, just get the book however you want. It is a lot of fun. Additionally, we have Vecna, Eve of Ruin coming out in just a couple of months. They just announced that there is a bonus prequel one-shot adventure that you can get for free if you pre-order the adventure, if you pre-order Vecna Eve of Ruin on D&D Beyond. That'll show up in your account on April 16th, which is like a full month before the actual adventure, before the actual campaign shows up. But if you pre-order the either digital copy or the digital physical bundle, you get this bonus one-shot, which is pretty cool. So we'll have a link to that in the show notes as well. And in terms of homebrew, what is going to be our homebrew corner pick of the week? Well, of course, we're talking Flint Fireforge. We're talking Dragonlance. And there's something really cool going on lately in like the Dragonlance homebrew community, where they're taking all the old like AD&D modules and converting them to 5th edition. Because let's be honest, if you've only played 5th edition and you only know 5th edition, you're going to want to continue playing 5th edition for the most part. Sure, some folks might want to go back and learn the rules for previous editions, but when you already know a game, you want to play that game. And so these folks are doing the great job of bringing that old content into modern times. And that's exactly what I'm going to highlight. It is Flint's Axe, the Heroic Conversion. Now, you will need the original module to play. The original module is called Flint's Axe. You can also get the PDF of that on DM's Guild. It's $2.99 right now. Actually, it's on sale. So for $3 plus the $239 that the conversion costs you, so less than $6, this entire thing will cost you. Before the War of the Lance, Flint Fireforge returned to his place of birth, the dwarven town of Hillholm. There, he uncovered a fiendish plot and used his magical battle axe to stop evil dwarves from destroying his home. The axe was destroyed in Flint's final battle with the leader of the evil forces. Or was it? Now rumors are circulating that Flint's axe has been seen around Hillholm. It's up to the player characters to solve the mystery and find the legendary battle axe of one of the heroes of the Lance. And of course, the axe is what we talked about in the first half of the show. And so this is an adventure tied around that. But yeah, you'll find a full 5th edition conversion of the adventure, tips on how to give it a real heroic feel, new magical items, including the Tharkin axe, as well as the continuation of the epic journey in post-war the Lance Ancelon. So definitely check it out. It is from Lair of the Sith, which can't not like a good Star Wars reference tied into D&D for sure. But yeah, check it out if you are interested in not only, you know, playing some 5e Dragonlance, but also getting a taste of the, you know, the beginnings of Dragonlance, like what it was like to really experience Dragonlance in its prime. So that being said, let's go ahead and jump back into the lore. Hello and welcome back. We are talking Flint Fireforge on this week's episode of the D&D Lorecast. We covered the early years of his life, including falling in love with a lady he meets in a beast pit, fighting minotaurs, trying to uncover the mystery of his brother's death, all sorts of shenanigans.
Yeah, I was going to say, this guy had a very busy youth.
Well, I mean, it's a dwarven youth, so probably so it's almost 50 years before the events of Dragons of Autumn Twilight.
Man.
Which, again, is a dwarven youth.
Yeah, I did not get up to nearly that many adventures in my youth. Granted, I'm only 40, not 50, so maybe with an extra 10 years I could...
But I couldn't do that now at my age. I wouldn't
need
kidding?
Yeah, my knees.
my back. I need that sweet, sweet Warforged technology. So after 5 years, Flint reunites with Tanis and Tasselhoff Burfoot outside of Solas, where they are confronted by some goblins that they easily defeat. It's, you know, it's a first level adventure type stuff. before heading to the inn of the last home. Once at the inn, they are encountered by the drunken high theocrat of Solas, a fellow by the name of Hedrick, who falls into the fireplace so drunk. It's
does he catch on fire?
If you fall into a fireplace, you're going to catch on fire.
I mean, yeah, I guess in Dragonlance times, the fireplace is always going. It's like Wi-Fi. You always have one.
It would be weird not to. You wouldn't notice it at first, but then you're like, hey, wait a minute. There's no fire going on.
Right.
So Tasselhoff attempts to knock him down with a disguised blue crystal staff, which inadvertently heals Hedrick, which reveals the staff's true nature and attracts unwanted attention. An onlooker yells out that Gold Moon and Riverwind, who are with them, are wanted for possessing the staff, which is being sought by Toad, the hobgoblin tribe leader, which leads the companions to flee, and eventually they reach the city of Zaxxaroth. So here, in the underground depths, the black dragon, Cassanth, nearly kills Riverwind. And there is some lore with that. So a few years prior, Takisis had cast out Cassanth from the Black Dragon army, basically for defiance. Instead, Cassanth is commanded to guard the discs of Mishakal in Zaxxaroth as punishment. Cassanth makes her lair in the underground depths of the city, amassing treasures, you know, typical dragon horde stuff, as well as the discs, and also Fist Hand Dandelus' spellbook. Now, at this point, Riverwind infiltrates Zaxxaroth and retrieves the blue crystal staff, briefly lifting Cassanth's boredom. Cassanth and her draconian servant, Shans, track Riverwind, disguised as normal looking people, not disguised as a, you know, not looking like a dragon and draconian. They toy with Riverwind before revealing themselves, but Riverwind manages to kill Shans and escape after throwing some alchemical powder into Cassanth's face. So Cassanth's about to attack. Riverwind thinks quickly, throws this powder in his face, and Riverwind escapes while Cassanth's rolling on the ground in frustration and pain. So when Riverwind shows back up in Zaxxaroth, Cassanth views this as a keen opportunity for revenge. However, Goldmoon uses the staff to save Riverwind, prompting their return to Solace. But before they're able to get there, they are captured by the aforementioned Toad and sent to Pax Tharkas as slaves. Now, this fortress is at the border between the Qualinesti Forest of the Elves and Thorbarden, the Fortress of the Dwarves, and was originally built as a symbol of peace and unity between not only the elves and the dwarves, but the humans as well. But during the War of the Lance, it was claimed by a portion of the Red Dragon Army after it was basically sitting abandoned for years. I mean, squatters' rights, you know?
Yeah, yeah. The dragons are in the right, as far as I'm concerned.
As far as Absolutian law is concerned, yeah, they have squatters' rights. And it soon became the personal headquarters of Dragon High Lord Verminard. But before they're able to get to Pax Tharkas, they are freed. The elves, by the elves from Qualinesti, they are take a brief period to recover, and the group decides to continue on to Pax Tharkas so they can free the slaves there. So it's like, hey, we're headed there anyway. We're on our way. Let's go ahead and make things right.
Which is what, to take it back to Star Wars, Qui-Gon could have done in The Phantom Menace, but instead he's buying children and stuff. Like
he is participating in the slave trade.
Yeah.
Look, intentions aside, the best of intentions, you know, the road to hell are paved with the best of intentions. And Qui-Gon Jinn had the best intention to save this child and possibly fulfill some sort of prophecy. He's actively engaging in the slave trade. He gambles for a slave. And not only that, but also cheats to do so. Were the dice loaded? Cubes. Were the chance cubes loaded?
That seems like something George Lucas would go back and make clear, you know, like Greedo shooting first in a special edition 20 years after the fact. Like, so maybe it's better he sold it.
The chance cube was loaded. And so Qui-Gon was merely using the Force, was merely like leveling the playing field.
The playing field. Qui-Gon's a hero.
And Anakin technically wasn't a slave. He was a boy, and his name was Anakin. He's a person.
I write great dialogue.
That's for Holocron Histories, also on the Robots Radio Network Discord. Check it out if you're into Star Wars. It's a fantastic show. It's essentially this, but for Star Wars. So if you have the same sort of brain itch that I do, and you also love Star Wars, it's going to be right up your alley. So they decide to continue on to Pax Tharkas to free the slaves there. And they succeed. They also defeat the Dragon High Lord Verminard before they flee into the Carolus Mountains. There, they are able to recover the Hammer of Karras in Thorbarden. And they stay there for a winter with the human refugees from the aforementioned slave camp. So the Hammer of Karras, or Karras, was forged in 2072 pre-Cataclysm. So this thing is well over 2,000 years old. It was forged by Thorbarden dwarves to honor the Hammer of Rorks, which was wielded by the god to forge Kryn. So essentially to create the world that they live on. Originally named the Hammer of Honor, it was presented to the Empire of Urgoth as a peace offering. It's light in weight, but because it was essentially you know, divine, it's struck with the force of Ryok's, with runes carved into the handle, and it protected the bearer from dwarven attacks. It could only be used for honorable and peaceful purposes, so it was unable to shed blood in anger or hatred. When hitting the anvil of Thorbjarn, it produced a sound heard throughout the earth and the heavens. It reappeared during the Third Dragon War, aiding Duncan Ironweaver in forging the first dragon lances. And it was given to the legendary dwarven hero Karas, which is why it's known as the Hammer of Karas, known for his courage and nobility by the Kaolin dwarves for his service during the Goblin Wars. And it was then that it was renamed. However, disgusted by the Dwarf Gate War, which we discussed in the first half of the show, Karas leaves Thorbjarn, prophesying the hammer's return one day and the rise of a proper king to reunite all the different dwarven clans. So after this winter that they sort of hole up and, you know, kind of regroup, the group then journeys to Tarsus to commission ships to transport the refugees, but found the city under Dragon Army control. They were split up. They survive an attack by the Red Dragon Army, as well as the Blue Dragons that are commanded by the Blue Lady. And Flint was part of the larger party, which journeys to Ice Reach to find a dragon orb. So en route, they experience a dream similar to one that their friends had had previously, where Flint is killed by Tika, who was the young girl that he had, you know, taken in years earlier, the one that he made toys for and made sure got adopted, which is doesn't make any sense. Again, if you're going to make me a toy and make sure I have parents, one of the last things I'm going to do is probably kill you.
Yeah, yeah.
Granted, I live in this world and not in the world of Kryn, but I can't imagine it's any different.
Yeah, I don't feel like, yeah, there's a lot of custom separating us when it comes to murdering people who've helped you out.
I mean, I'll have to, I feel pretty strongly about that. If you disagree, let me know. You know, Margaret Weiss is just a tweet away and it's pretty good about answering stuff. So, but again, I think we're both in the right here. So regardless, they get to Ice Wall Castle. They kill Dragon High Lord Theothas and obtain the Dragon Orb. Sturm Brightblade and another knight of Salamnia, Derek Crownguard, takes the Dragon Orb to Sancrist, while the others, including Flint, take another route through the mountains. It is there that they encounter Fizbin, who Flint thought was dead, and later agreed to travel back to Larana to discuss the orbs with the knight, or the dragon orb with the knight. After the Whitestone Council meeting, Flint joins Larana, Sturm, Tazzelhop, you know, his buddies again, at the High Claris Tower, where they defended against the dragon army hordes. This is where Sturm sacrifices himself in combat against the Blue Lady, against Kitiara. But the tower's forces, thanks and no little part to Flint, are able to repel the armies. At this point, Flint returns to Palanthas with Larana, where they are welcomed as heroes, having saved the world, essentially. Larana becomes general of the Whitestone Army, and Flint and Tasselhoff are given a dragon named Kursaw to ride into battle. Which, again, if I'm doing something cool, if I do something great, and your thank you to me is a pet dragon,
we're all right. I'm not going to murder you.
You're doing something right. However, as we mentioned at the top of the show, the Fireforge clan has a long-standing heart condition, a hereditary heart condition. And as a result of that, Flint suffers a massive heart attack a year before the War of the Lance really officially ends. And as he lay dying, he asks Fizbin to, quote, help me leave Ancelon, which is a very poetic way to, like, ask someone to, like, hey, make sure I you know, I like be with me while I die. Like if I'm like if I'm dying and you're with me and I say like help me leave Texas, you'd be like, that's
do you want me to take your body to Oklahoma?
It's like, no, I don't right. do that.
Yeah, I don't think that's legal.
There's a movie called Grand Theft Parsons all about that. It stars Johnny Knoxville. And it was at this point that Flint finally saw Fizbin for who he really was, which was an avatar for the dragon god Paladine. So Fizbin carries Flint to the Black Pool in Godhome, and together they disappeared. And according to the lore, Flint's spirit is resting under a tree near Rourke's Forge in the heavens, awaiting for the time when his companions can finally return to him. And this long-awaited reunion occurs after the War of Souls, when he is finally reunited with all of his companions and friends. So, Flint Fireforge, a rascal and a scamp, a hero,
a toy maker,
an adopter. Not he doesn't adopt a child, but
a facilitator of adoption of children.
There you go. So there you have it. That's Flint Fireforge. Before we leave you, we're going to answer the age-old question: if we were to have a full beard day, what gift would we want? Flint got a axe from his brother. Sean, what would you want?
I mean, I'd really like a dragon to ride into battle.
I mean, now, like, I didn't know that was an option.
Yeah, I didn't know that was on the table till we got like here. But you know, if a dragon's not in the budget, I don't know. I'd like a box set of the Dune books. I'm rereading the first Dune, and boy, I'd like to read the rest.
Boy, howdy, would I like to read off?
I mean, if I can't have the dragon. Yeah, okay. Six. Yeah, the six okay. originals. Yeah.
Let's see. If I had my full beard day and I was given a gift, I would just want the companionship of my friends and family.
Oh, God damn it.
No, of course not. I would. I mean, that would definitely be. I mean, it's an occasion. Of course, I would want that, obviously. But if I'm getting a physical gift, maybe old white box, original D&D white box, which go for thousands of dollars. That would be cool. Although I wouldn't have much need for it. But then again, like, I have so many D&D and TTRPG books that, not that I don't need them, but I don't use them on a regular basis. But it's just,
you're not cracking them every day.
I think that would be impossible to do. So I've got so many, but I like to know that they're there.
Yeah, they make a real nice background to your Zoom video there.
Thank you.
You're welcome. My background's from Doom.
I can see that. It's also very nice.
Thank you.
And thank you, dear listener, for enjoying another episode of the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. We hope that you come back and listen to us. We hope that you tell a friend as well. My name is Sergio.
Mine is Ziggy Stardust.
When it comes to hotel reservations.
Yeah, yeah. As a public figure, I am still Sean.
Fare thee well, dear listener. And until we meet again, may all your 20s be natural.
Thank you for listening to the Dungeons & Dragons Lorecast. If you've enjoyed the show, consider following us on Twitter, Instagram, and TikTok at D&D Lorecast, or jumping into the Robots Radio Discord to chat more with us about Dungeons & Dragons. We'll see you soon.
You've been listening to a Robots Radio podcast. Smart shows for interesting people. Check out all the shows at robotsradio.net.
It's time to ride the sandworms. It's time to eat the spice. It's time to take our vengeance on the Harkonnens tonight.